hours over here that's going to run that press conference. They're just not going to happen. And so we wanted to get that out. Yesterday, we were scheduled to do an interview with a young man who has a doctor's degree. Is a doctor in Chicago. He is a clinical research specialist, Department of Neurosurgery in University of Illinois, Chicago. Born and raised in the 2200 block of Leahy in Muskegon Heights.
Mm-hmm.
A graduate of Muskegon Heights High School. I know his family very well. And so when I found out he was I'm like, this is a secret. I didn't know this man is a doctor in Illinois. I wanted to get him on radio and talk about his career and talk about his role to being a doctor in Chicago. Still in his 30s, Rob.
Mm.
Young man, doing the big, a Muskegon Heights grad. We happen to have on the show Dr. Kareem Watson. How you doing today, Dr. Watson?
I'm very blessed, and it's a pleasure to be with you all.
Man, it's an honor to have you on radio. Kareem, man, you graduated from Muskegon Heights in what year?
In 1993. You're making me tell my age.
Ah! You're young, man. You're young. Did you always have had an admiration to be, aspiring to be a doctor?
I did. I think it goes back to the time when I was about 6 years old, just remembering that, always having a love for science, but I think with so many young people, when you aspire to be something, that thing can change. And I know I was talking to a parent recently who was concerned about their child because the child went to college, you know, pre-med, but then while they're at college, they take certain classes and they change their major, change their mind. And I tell parents all the time, it doesn't matter what your child changes his or her major to. It doesn't matter what they aspire to be as long as they set some goal. And that goal may even change, and you never know. Sometimes there's a destiny track for your life where you can set out to do one thing, but there'll be a higher power in charge that might lead you to do something else. And as long as that something else is productive and serving your community and causing some type of impact in the lives of others, I say do it, no matter what it is.
Right. Now, what college did you go to?
University of Michigan.
University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And you've been at University of Illinois Chicago Hospital?
I've been here for the last 5 years. I came here at the end of my medical school training while I was finishing up my training at Cook County. And then I came up here, came on with assisting with some study coordinating for some clinical trials. And after medical school, decided that I didn't want to go the traditional route. I got introduced to clinical research later on in my career, and I wish I had been introduced to it early on in my career because I always had interest in research. But when I was an undergraduate at the University of Michigan, I was fortunate enough to participate in a lot of research projects, but those research projects were all in the lab. Because when people hear research, they think that you're in a lab, they think that you're dealing with animals, or you're dealing with chemicals and pipettes and all those things. But the reality of it is that there's a whole other world of research that, unfortunately, people of color, particularly African Americans, are not introduced to.
Hmm. What kind of research are you doing?
And that's clinical research. Right now I'm doing research on brain tumors and strokes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Any information that you can reveal to us?
There is some information that we can reveal. Basically, the bottom line is that there's so much technology that, you know, so much is going on as it relates to technology. One of the main studies that we're working on right now in our department is a device that actually is an external device that patients can wear for the most aggressive form of brain tumor called glioblastoma multiforme, GBM. This is an international study, and the sponsor is actually out of Israel. And a lot of people don't know this, but Israel is the new world leader when it comes to technology advancement. And they have a lot of research going on over there trying to think of innovative ways to treat current diseases. And I was fortunate enough about 2 years ago to actually visit Israel to see some of the technology advances that are going on there, and you would just be amazed. And I wish that many more students, you know, particularly students from the Muskegon Heights area, could go abroad and really see that there's a whole other world out there outside of Muskegon Heights, and then bring some of those things back to our community.
Right, right. Bring them back to our community. Department of Neurosurgery, so that deals with the brain. Then.
It does.
All the brain. Brain tumors. What about Alzheimer's?
We do Alzheimer's research, actually. I don't particularly do any Alzheimer's research, but we do Alzheimer's research, Parkinson's research. We do research on migraine studies, chronic back pain, chronic leg pain, spinal cord disorders. So we do a lot of research here. We're one of the few neurosurgical departments that actually has a grant, a multi-million-dollar grant from the NIH, which stands for the National Institute of Health, looking at a particular type of stroke called vertebrobasilar stroke, which is a stroke that involves posterior circulation.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. Dr. Kareem Watson's on the phone line, 1993 graduate. Tell Muskegon your family here, and you got a big family.
Well, I do. I have a big family, which is the foundation of anything that I've ever done good in this world has been because of my family. And first of all, because of God. Second of all, because of my family. But I'm the youngest of nine children of Tommy and Linda Watson in Muskegon Heights, Michigan. And my dad was a longtime community activist and educational activist in Muskegon Heights. Served on the school board for I think almost 20 years or more. I think, maybe 27 years. I forget how long he served, but most of my childhood he was there, and all of my adulthood he was serving there. So I grew up in a home where education was paramount, where it wasn't an option of whether or not you would go to school. It was just, where would you go? But what you would do was left up to you, but you had to do something, and you had to serve your community as well as serve your church. So.
Right,
and
right.
That was just the household we grew up in. We laugh now. You know, unfortunately, my dad, he passed away a little over a year ago now. And fortunately, we're left with memories, though, where we can laugh at all the lessons that he taught us, and as well as my mother and my sisters. And being the youngest of nine children, I kind of say that I was privileged enough to be able to look and see, okay, that worked, that didn't work. What do I want to do? What didn't work? And make those things a part of my life. But my dad wanted all of us to make sure that we did something with our lives, that we had every single opportunity that he never had. I remember when I was an undergraduate, I had the opportunity to study abroad to several different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time being in France and just thinking to myself, who would have ever thought that a little boy from Muskegon Heights, who's, you know, the son of a steel mill worker back in the day, would be in France studying another language, studying another culture. And I remember looking up at the sky thinking to myself,
wow,
you know, that there's so many prayers that have gone up before me.
Mm.
That my life is kind of, I call it the amen of those prayers, because so many times our ancestors, they didn't hear the amen. They didn't hear the it is finished to their lives.
Mm.
But I feel that our lives is the amen to so many of the prayers that have gone up before us.
We are receiving the blessings of their labor.
We are.
Yeah, I felt something of that, and that's real, hearing that, and glad to know that you're humbling, and you know that, because some people would think, well, it's because of me, it's because I am the man.
Not at all.
It is the prayer of the slave that we are receiving.
That's
what they died hoping that we'd be free to be able to do that. Let's talk about the impact that the legendary passed, Mr. Tommy Watson, had on you and the family, period, because everybody in your family are doing good.
We are very blessed, and it's due to the prayers of my father. The impact, that could be a whole book, a whole show, that's my whole life. But recently I had the opportunity I serve on a board of directors for a new school here in Chicago.
Okay.
And I was at the scholarship banquet for that school, and I remember sitting in the banquet this past Saturday thinking to myself, everything that I do that is of any type of civic or public or educational service to my community is because of what my dad instilled in us. I remember when he was fighting for the Muskegon Heights Public School District, and I remember his health began to fail him a little bit as he was doing some of that work. And I told him, I said, well, Dad, you need to slow down because you're going to kill yourself. You're doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, he said, I feel sorry for you if you haven't found something that you're willing to die for yet.
Wow.
And his lessons were tough. They were powerful, and they didn't always come with the sugar. They sometimes came very, very real, very raw. But it was a spirit of compassion behind every lesson that he taught that was just undeniable. And what he taught us, first and foremost, that first of all, we were servants of all.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught us to lead with a servant spirit.
Wow. That's something you said. He told you, I feel sorry for you if you haven't found something worthy to die for.
That's right.
That's amazing right there. That's something we all need to look at and say, what are we willing to die for?
Exactly.
A cause outside of ourselves, because he was working for the school district.
Exactly.
He was out there vouching outside of me, PA. What other cause are we willing to die for?
Mm-hmm. And so instead of, I was telling him that, you know, to slow down, that you're doing too much. He said, you know, what he was telling me in essence was that, well, you're probably not doing enough.
Dr. Kareem Watson's on the phone line, 1993 graduate of Muskegon Heights high school. When you hear the negativity of the headlines about the school district, and of course, this has been going on for years, nothing new. When you went through school, 1993, I'm sure they had us, there was no ranking that showed us being at the top in the academic status.
No, it wasn't. And it's unfortunate that I was, several of my classmates and friends that I'm still stay in contact with, and my circle of friends, I don't know what our parents did, but they had this, they must have all prayed and had some type of pact with God where they said that we're going to speak these things over to the existence of our children's lives and watch them, you know, come to fruition. Because I look at the circle of friends that my parents allowed me to have, and key word there is a circle of friends that my parents allowed me to have. And I look at all of us, and all of us are doing well and impacting our community. I look at Keith Guy, who's staying right there in the district in the fight, and I look at Keith, and I look at Sinkyu Moody and Enid Warren Moore, Stephanie Payne, Keisha Muhammad, and the list can go on and on. Chanel Langston, I could continue this list on and on. Stephen Harris, several friends that we had that we grew up with that were doing great then, that are still doing great, and that are serving, still continue to serve their community.
Right.
And I remember oftentimes going to summer programs or when I went away to college, of meeting people from the surrounding area, and they would be surprised when they found out that I was from Muskegon Heights. But for me, success in Muskegon Heights was never a surprise. It was what I saw.
Mm.
All my mentors and all the leaders that I saw either came from Muskegon Heights or came from communities that looked like Muskegon Heights.
Right.
So it was nothing new for me. And my dad used to always tell people, when you fighting and taking up for Muskegon Heights is not, it's bigger than fighting and taking up for Muskegon Heights. He used to remind people what Muskegon Heights represents.
Hmm.
And people in Muskegon need to remember that Muskegon Heights, whether you're from the Heights or not, whether you live in the Heights or not, it represents you. It represents, it's your identity, because it's a cultural and racial and ethnic identity tied into Muskegon Heights that people need to recognize. So when people speak negatively of the school system,
right,
they're speaking negatively of our children, they're speaking negatively of our community, and ultimately they're speaking negatively about us.
That's right.
So we have to recognize it's deeper than that.
Subconsciously, they're doing that.
Exactly.
Because you cannot say Muskegon Heights without thinking about African Americans.
Exactly. Now, and the flip side of that, though, is that we have to be accountable, though.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, and I won't say what's going on now because I'm not there, and I think that would be hypocritical.
Uh-huh.
But in the past, what I can say is that we were raised to be accountable to our community. We were raised to take care of our home and our family and to participate in our church or whatever your religious beliefs were. We were encouraged to have that type of participation. And that's what we have to get back to.
Right.
That level of accountability and that sense of community. And recognize that sense of community is bigger than just the four walls of the Heights.
Mm.
But it represents the Heights.
Wow. Dr. Kareem Watson's on the phone line. I remember seeing you growing up, man. I was so proud. I didn't know you was a baby, though. I should have known you was a baby. But they're so proud to hear what you've been able to do. And I know you're going to continue to move on and do greater things there in that neurosurgery. Maybe you can solve the problems that we have, that some issues that deal with African Americans.
That is my next step. My next mission in life is, it's funny you talk about that. I've been really praying and thinking and asking God to really give me what will be my legacy. What I think that every person that's called to do something bigger than themselves has to think about: what legacy do you want to leave? What impact do you want to make in your community? And this next phase of my career is really working on training African-American scientists to answer the questions that maybe I might not be able to answer, but giving them the tools to answer them. So it's really about training that next generation of scientists to be able to do things far greater than what I do. I tell my nieces and nephews all the time, it's not enough for you to strive to be as good as I am, but you have to strive to be better than me. It's not enough for you to achieve the things that I've achieved. You have to achieve greater than that. Every generation has to achieve greater and greater by building on the success of the previous generation.
Wow.
And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a doctor. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a lawyer. But you have to do something to build upon the seeds of success that were imparted in you by someone else.
Right. And is your middle name Sadat, or did you just call your...
No, that's my middle name. And it's funny, when I go places, people often wonder, how did you get the name Kareem Sadat? And, you know, being born in the late 70s, it was, you know, the time of, you know, African and African-American pride. And
right.
My name actually, my dad was actually being prophetic, little did he know, because my name means generous leader of all.
Hmm.
And my dad has always encouraged us, but particularly for me, to be generous, to never have my eye on the prize of money, but to have my eye on the prize of helping someone out and being generous with your talents as well as your resources.
Wow.
And then being leader of all, whatever that means.
Wow.
And sometimes people say, well, you know, do you feel this burden? Do you feel this pressure to succeed? And I do sometimes, but I think everybody should feel some of that pressure to be better, to be, I call it, your highest God-centered self. Everybody should feel that pressure to tap into and exist as your highest potential in God.
Wow. Dr. Kareem Watson's on the phone line, Muskegon Heights grad, 1993. What can you say to the kids who might be listening right now? They go to Muskegon Heights High School, and they want higher ground. They want to go on to college. You know, what can you say to inspire them that they can do it no matter where you're from?
First of all, you have to believe in yourself, and simultaneously with that self-belief, believe in something bigger than you, something greater than you. You have to have a belief that's greater than you in order for you to do great things. You have to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, after you believe and identify the source of your belief, you then have to set a goal. And don't be ashamed if that goal changes. It's so many goals that I set that I failed, but I would have never failed had I not set those goals.
Mm-hmm.
So I say set a goal and don't listen to the naysayers. Some people call them haters. I don't like haters because it has a negative connotation. I don't like to use negative terms in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I say don't listen to the naysayers. Set that goal. Stay focused. Stay balanced. And find a cause that you're committed to.
Find a cause that you're committed to. What do you read, Kareem? What do you read?
Oh, that's an interesting thing. I read a lot, and that's one thing that my parents instilled in me. This past weekend I was looking at a collection of my books. And I saw a book that my mother gave to me called The Millionaire Mind. And she inscribed in the book, she said, you know, to my son who already has a millionaire mind. And this was back in 1992, before I graduated from high school. And I remember that every time my parents used to go to what's called NEPSE, I think the National Association of Black School Educators, they used to bring my younger siblings and I back books.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad used to just, we were just inundated with these books. And my mother would write inscriptions in those books. And I remember her bringing me Ben Carson's book, Gifted Hand.
Oh, yes.
And I think I was in the eighth grade when she bought me that book. And I remember him reading about his academic struggles and identifying with that. Because what people didn't know is that although I got great grades growing up, I got all A's all the time, but there was still this struggle internally to do well because the way I processed information was different than the way my peers processed information.
Hmm.
So I actually thought it was something wrong with me.
Wow.
Because even though the grades were there, it took so much for me to get those grades. And the way I processed things was totally different.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that affected me on standardized tests. It affected me all throughout college and medical school. But I learned to use that different way of processing. I learned to turn it around and say, this is what will be the thing that will make me a good researcher or a good scientist. Because my mind starts with the question and breaks it down differently.
Wow. So today they probably would have tried to put you in special education.
I'm sure they would have. I have no doubt about that.
And look at you, Rob. He's a doctor at University of Chicago, University of Illinois Chicago, in neurosurgery. You know, that's deep. I mean, everybody can't do that. No. That neurosurgery, that's like one of the highest level respectability in that field.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate. The current book I'm reading right now is it's called The Celestine Prophecy. Just a book that was given to me as a gift. That's one book I'm reading.
Okay. Wow. I'm not going to take too much of your time. I know you're busy there, and you've been very patient with us. I noticed on your Facebook page, you don't put there what you do, man. You're pretty quiet on that.
Well, I don't like Facebook. I think that I like Facebook for it to do what it did, keeping people connected.
Uh-huh.
I think it should keep people connected, but I'm old school in the sense of I like phone calls.
Okay.
I like letters. I'll do an email, but Facebook is just to get you the information. Then from there, you find out how to get back connected with that person, and you connect with them.
But I think that we as youth people have to be very careful about making everything so socially accessible, because you know social media is an amazing tool if used in the right way.
Uh-huh. Right. Tell us about the academy that the school that you're connected to.
Oh, that I would love to. The school I'm connected to here in Chicago is called the Village Leadership Academy, and it's a private school, but it's a school that serves K through five. And the school was actually started by two of my former graduate school classmates here in Chicago. Two African-American women started this school here in Chicago because they saw the need for underserved and economically disadvantaged minorities on the west side of Chicago. They saw that these students needed a chance.
Mm-hmm.
These two young women opened up a daycare, and after they opened up the daycare, the students went from the daycare to the public school preschools, only to find out that they were functioning at a higher level than the preschools. So the kids began to act out with their behavior. So their grades began to suffer. So the teachers then said, you know what, we'll take the daycare to first grade. So every year parents have begged these two teachers, these two African-American young women in their early 30s, to continue to expand this school. And our goal is to have the school to be K through 12 by 2020.
Wow.
Every year we plan to expand on a different add on a different school year. And the curriculum for the school is amazing. These kids are reading at a level 2 and 3 grade levels ahead.
Hmm.
And these kids learn social consciousness. They learn social justice. They learn an evidence-based curriculum. And what that means is that these kids are learning how to think critically. They're learning how to take a problem and dissect that problem from every level.
Mm-hmm.
If they're learning about diabetes, yeah, and that's right. We have elementary students learning about diabetes.
Diabetes, wow.
And these students are learning about what's going on in Darfur. You know, they're not just Chicago-minded students. They're globally-minded students. And we're in the process of raising money to take these students to the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Wow.
In this June.
That's great. Man, I'm seeing you got 125 kids enrolled. Went to the website and pulled it up. That's awesome. I'd love to see. Do they have to take the same kind of tests?
They take the same type of tests, and not only do they take the same type of tests, but they outperform their peers on these tests.
And these are black kids?
These are African-American kids.
Wow.
90% of them economically disadvantaged. I think about 80% of them are first time. They come from parents that are not even college graduates.
Now, what makes it so different? I see you got before and after school programs there. What makes it different?
What makes this program, what makes Village Leadership Academy different, is that the curriculum is a curriculum that's engaged in social consciousness, self awareness, community awareness, and academic achievement.
That's it. Wow, Dr. Kareem Watson. I don't know when the next time you're coming home, man. We got to definitely keep in contact.
I would love to, and I would love to take the model that they're using at Village Leadership Academy. We would love to take that model and bring it home and let that model expand.
Expand.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, God knows we can use it. Folks, to impact your life, man, before you go.
Oh, my father, first and foremost, my father. Everything he did was to impact my life. My pastor, my current pastor of my church, Reverend Avery Burrell, all the way up to the previous bishop, Elder Willie Burrell, and
yes,
to his dad, Bishop William Burrell Sr., my godfather, Dr. Robert A. Warren, Mr. Ward, former principals, I mean, you name it, Mr. Davis, my former principal, the late Mr. Baldwin, former principal. And so when people talk about the absence of African-American men in their communities, I grew up with an abundance of African-American men in my community.
Right.
Where I could look in any corner of my life and I could see some man there that was there to guide me and to serve as a role model. I remember being in the Urban League growing up in Muskegon. We had, who's now Dr. Daryl Johnson,
mm-hmm,
was one of our Urban League, you know, mentors. You know, Miss Gloria Gardner was there. And,
right.
You know, Dr. Warren's wife, Mama Warren, was there, and I had, you know, we had Patricia Minot, who's still active in our public school system, and I could go on and on with leaders and people that was there to influence and order my steps and my direction. Dr. Garrison, I remember being a child talking to Dr. Garrison about what I wanted to do and him encouraging me, and I even got a scholarship from him when I was an undergrad. So,
wow.
I had no absence of mentors and leaders.
Thanks, man. Thank you for being available, and thanks for sharing your testimony to people here on radio.
Thank you.
We have to get you back on. We're hoping one day we can have you take some questions. Our line, too, is messed up here. So, I mean, we had that fixed in a few days and made it
someone, next... someone just sent a Facebook message over. So.
Oh, they listening. Folks are listening. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Young man, class of 1993, and been in his career in 5 years. So you getting there in record steps.
I'm hoping. It doesn't feel like record steps. It feels like it's taken a lifetime.
Are you a Bulls fan or are you still a Pistons fan?
I'm Pistons first, Bulls second. But this always been that way.
Oh, okay. What about Bears or Lions?
Now that one's switched. I'm Bears first, Lions.
Ah, you give it to winning team, huh? Okay. All right, good brother. Hey, I know you got to work there.
All right.
Enjoy yourself. I know your niece says she's coming there for this weekend. She's excited.
Is she coming this weekend?
I think she told me she's coming up a weekend for spring break.
I know they're coming.
Yep, looking forward to it. They spring break this weekend, man. You got to get the big penthouse together, man.
I will do my best.
God bless you, Kareem. Proud of you, man.
God bless you all as well.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Ah, there you go, Dr. Kareem Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And young man.
Another guy from Muskegon Heights that actually doing something in life?
There's so many stories, Rob. That's why I'm glad we are
the
here.
Chronicle, they
I want to see just there.
You know, not just them. ZVM,
I mean,
a couple of moments.
If now. You look at the mainstream media, it would make you think that you can go to this school and you won't be successful. Like
you
said,
people that work there, they tell you the same thing.
These standardized tests they come up with, they there for a purpose. And I didn't do good on standardized tests because I didn't take it serious. I mean, to me, that test was not going to affect me graduating. Didn't take them serious. For real, Rob. You know, you rushed on trying to get them done. But you believe them, they make you think that that we can't learn. This brother just graduated in 93, and he's a clinical research specialist, medical doctor in the Department of Neurosurgery at one of the biggest hospitals in the country. Yeah. Congratulations, Dr. Kareem Watson. Rob, how you doing?